for 12 years in a row, ranking Arizona's number one most trusted referral network, RosieOnTheHouse.com.
And we're privileged and happy to have you.
And over three decades of Rosie on the House.
Your Saturday morning tradition for 32 years. 9 o'clock hour, it's hour number two of our weekly radio broadcast. This is our On the House hour. We spend the hour on something, on your home, castle, or cabin. Generally. Ordinarily.
Had a little hitch in our giddy-up this week.
We planned. One of the things we do here at Rosie on the House is we travel the country for all kinds of different trade shows, different expos, different things housing related. One of those annual events is the National Kitchen and Bath International Show. Went online this week. Our plan was to cover, you know, here's the new products, here's new features in cabinets, here's new kitchen appliances, here's the latest
new trends
and greatest.
Yeah. So exciting. So much fun every year. We like to go up, usually in Vegas, and walk ourselves to
death.
Is
K-Biz in Vegas?
Mm-hmm.
That one is too.
Though I saw this year. It was supposed to be in California. But website came out and said, hey, we're going to Zoom the whole thing. It's going to be the most amazing thing. Easiest access. You won't even be tired. It crashed within about an hour.
So the online.
Yeah, 30,000 people signed up and it crashed.
Oh my gosh.
So it's a little challenging.
Our content for this hour is stuck in the interweb of things.
We will get to it when
it comes
out. It's
out there drifting in space. So we have a different program that we just pulled off of last year's top articles with a little spin on it. But before that, as it stands, the National Hardware Show, which is usually in May, they've moved it to October, but they do say it will be live back at the Las Vegas Convention Center and the new West Hall.
I can't imagine they
where
add
do
more
they have room to add on it?
I don't know, but it'll be fun. I like wearing myself out at those shows. It's fun. Just get to hold things, look at things, talk to the experts.
I could understand it going up, but I can't imagine it going out anywhere.
Mm-mm.
But that'll be fun. So we'll be back in Vegas for the National Hardware Show in October. So we'll have a program sometime in October, November around the new findings at the National Hardware Show. Originally started in New York during the post-World War II housing boom, eventually moved to Chicago in the 70s, and now a new home in Las Vegas. And it was not held last year, but it'll be back for the 75th National Hardware Show. We'll look forward to that. So going to what are we going to talk about this Saturday? We're all kind of standing around looking at each other. All right, what do we do? So we looked at an article we published at the end of the year, which was here's our top articles from the year. One of those being native plants for your landscape. So we thought, well, let's put a different spin on that. What about native plants to attract wildlife? And so that is the topic for this hour for your landscaping. If you're looking to attract butterflies, bees, pollinators, hummingbirds, quail, dove, cactus wren, so on and so forth, what are great plants, trees, shrubs, flowers to attract that natural wildlife? So when you're out in your yard, you know, on a beautiful Saturday morning listening to Rosie on the House and sitting in your favorite rocking chair under a shade tree watching like a little covey of quail run through your yard, thinking about all the chores you got to tackle later on today and putting that plan together. So we have kept John Eisenhower and Sarah Maitland in from our Talking Trees, because looking at this, when we put the article together, the first three were all trees. And we thought, well, they're going to be in studio with us already. So what better thing to do than hold them over for the first hour, segment of this hour to talk about the great trees to attract wildlife.
Well, earlier in the last hour, you mentioned about times when you don't want to do so much pruning. Well, this would be a great time to talk about if you are trying to attract wildlife in your yard, one of the best things you can do is back off on the pruning. The dense foliage is going to attract more birds and other wildlife to come in, because they're going to have the shade, they're going to have the privacy, the protection that dense foliage provides. We also encourage you to especially leave those lower branches on your trees, because those are the ones that provide the most shade. And like you mentioned, the quail, also leave the leaf litter on the ground if at all possible, because that gives a scratch. It provides an environment for insects to come in where those birds can get in and scratch around and really enjoy your yard as a little sanctuary. Our yard is what some people might consider overgrown.
Some people, me including yourself, including I remember you saying sometimes. Before the program even started, you were telling Sarah, that, I'm way overplanted in my backyard.
There is a little bit of that. I'm the cobbler with the barefoot kids because I am the arborist who doesn't want to go home and do my own trees sometimes. But that being said, no, we do like to leave things a little more natural. And it's so nice to have a covey of quail in our yard almost every day. And you hear them back there clucking, and you just see them running across our pool deck because they've got the cover. They're going to go to the yards where you have a little bit more foliage, and they can get back in there and find a little bit of privacy, protection from the neighborhood cats, and, you know, can get in and around and actually find some forage and find some seeds and insects in that leaf litter.
And so the trees that we have listed today, the first one is the desert ironwood, which, in my opinion, on desert trees, is my favorite. I don't know what it is about the desert ironwood, but
I know you sent me on a wild goose chase out on Carefree Highway to look at that really tall one last year.
What do you mean wild goose chase?
It was awesome.
I was gonna say, did you not find it?
I did, and I found it with our good friend Rick Kober, and the two of us looked and looked. We finally found it, and he was toward the end of his life on chemotherapy and knew that he had a very short time left in his fight against cancer. But, you know, one of the last things he wanted to do with me was go find a big, nice, awesome tree. And so thank you, Romy, for giving us that chance to get out there. And it was the last day I spent with Rick. So it was pretty neat. But, yeah, back to your desert ironwood. Amazing trees, prolific bloomers. They're sporadic bloomers, but when they do bloom, it's pretty dramatic.
And to not leave everyone hanging, the Arizona Forestry Division has what they call a majestic tree program. And it is a recording of the largest, oldest known tree. So there's two. There's a legacy program, which is, I think, the oldest tree. And then there's the majestic one, which is the tallest tree. And they have, and sometimes it's the same, sometimes it's not, of, you know, each individual tree species. So you've got the biggest, oldest known ponderosa. You've got the oldest known juniper, which the Granite Mountain Hotshot saved. And there is the tallest known ironwood. You can see it on Highway 74, Carefree Highway, driving. It's on the south side of the road in the middle of a big wash. And I told you guys it was west of 211th turnoff, but I was wrong. It's east of the 211th turnoff, which is probably what
I was glad
what
I
took
could,
so long.
I could get you on the phone and get it dialed in. That was great. Yeah,
I think it's right at mile marker 9, I believe. You go over a wash, and on the south side, there's this big desert tree all by itself, and that is, as far as anybody knows, the tallest living ironwood in Arizona.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, and I mentioned Rick Kober. Rick is a very knowledgeable horticulturist and a friend of the industry, and for 30 or 40 years here in the Valley, well-known in the green industry, and I think he was a guest on our show here a couple of times.
He was. It was always a lot of fun.
Amazing. So.
What do you think the first thing he planted in heaven was?
Oh, was it an ironwood? Ironwood. No, he was on a quest to find a thornless ironwood.
He found one.
Yeah, he found one, and they were trying to
clone it.
They were trying to take the cells, and you know how they do with orchids. They take the meristem, put it in an auger, and they tumble it so that it can't develop a shoot or a root. And I don't know whatever happened to his ironwood, but he was trying to develop a thornless ironwood.
Now, would that be cool?
That would.
Yeah, because the one drawback with ironwoods is they are a little bit thorny.
But they do have that beautiful bloom, you know, that fuchsia pink.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the desert ironwood, the mesquite, your blue Palo Verde, all these are prolific bloomers that provide a lot of blossoms for pollinators and for birds.
And as we move from ironwood to mesquite, one of the reasons you see mesquite and the Palo Verdes more popular in, you know, developed landscapes, I say developed man-made landscapes, everybody wants instant gratification, and the desert ironwood is a very slow-growing tree. But it's what also makes it extremely hardy. The slower the growing tree, it seems like the hardier it is. Mm-hmm. And the longer they live. I mean, when you go out after the monsoons and you're picking up trees that are blown over, how often are you picking up an ironwood?
Very seldom.
You're picking up mesquites. You're picking up palo verdes.
Faster they're growing, the easier they fall apart.
So, but that said, mesquites are very popular and great. There's a lot of benefits as well. One of the best places, and I say best places, if you go to any of the lakes in Arizona, when you get up along a shoreline, you know, there's almost always a gigantic grove of mesquites that you can dock your boat and set up your lunch in, and a great shade canopy underneath mesquites.
Yeah, mesquite bosque. There's nothing quite like it. Yeah, finding a natural mesquite grove. Yeah, they're all around. I've got this really great picture of a mesquite tree that just growing right on the shoreline, and the water, the rising water levels in the lake had eroded almost the entire root system, except for a few little roots that were still in the ground. And here that little mesquite's just still thriving, just loving that spot, you know. But yeah, they're really a durable, bulletproof tree.
And the pods are very beneficial for wildlife, and the coyotes eat the pods. But I got a really treat this week. My girlfriend makes mesquite pod flour and made cookies for me. And they were, like, incredible, gluten-free and everything. But they're edible, yeah. And that's a good tree for wildlife.
Now, don't eat them if they're on the ground. Pick them off the tree. And the time to harvest them is really about the heat of the summer, late.
Fully dried out. Yeah.
June. So if you eat them off the ground, usually they're already infected by other bugs and insects and everything. Yeah. But never eat the pod straight off the ground. Just before anyone out is sitting out there looking at, oh, well, let me try that then.
Okay.
Yeah, and it'll tell you, too, if it's a little bit too early for the pod. It won't taste as sweet.
They're bitter.
You
know, yep.
They have to be pretty
dried out. Topic this hour, planting in your landscape to attract natural wildlife.